meeting to order, and my voice is coming in and out. But anyway, I'm going to try to project as much as I can. Welcome to December. This is our last board meeting for 2023, December the 20th. Glad to see a lot of staff here, and I think a few citizens and people visiting. We welcome you. Would you please stand to say the pledge and a moment of silence?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's also good to see our new supervisors and audience, Tim Hodge and Mike Gold, and the audience. Thank you for being here. Did I miss anyone else? No. Okay. So now we need an adoption of the agenda, please.
I move that we adopt the agenda.
Second.
All right. Mrs. Iger made the motion to adopt the agenda, and Mr. Fairchild seconded the motion. All of you in favor?
Aye.
I don't see anyone opposing, so the agenda is as read. We have a special presentation here. Where do you want us to be? Here or outside, like we usually do?
Yeah, I think we'll go down below, okay. And so we can read the retirement plaques, and maybe we can go ahead and start with Ms. Linda Lynn here first, and then we can kind of go through the board members.
Okay, so we're honoring the service and retirement of Moselle Booker, Patricia Iger, and Linda Lynn.
Here we go.
Here we go again. One last time.
It's okay, Eric.
Well,
get closer.
Like I've done this a couple of times.
so we are certainly here to honor the service and just outstanding gratitude and just amazing service to Fluvanna, the citizens, staff, and everyone. So we'll start off with Linda here first, and I'll let board members make some comments. So first, congratulations on your retirement. Linda H. Lenher, June 10, 1971 to December 31st, 2023. For 52 years of dedicated service, chosen by the people of Fluvanna County to serve as treasurer, January 1, 1984 to December 31st, 2023. Best wishes for a long and happy retirement, the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors, Fluvanna County, Virginia.
Thank you. Work with each and every one of you, and I'm gonna miss you, but I'm not leaving Fluvanna.
Board members, you know,
yeah, and Tony just said that.
Oh, that's all right.
I'll just say 1971, good lord.
Were you even born?
I started when I was 15, right?
What community service is greater than that to serve and stay in the community you grew up in. You know, the other day we were having the county Christmas party, and she's talking about how in that gym when she's playing basketball, and then to have still today been serving her community, be a part of it is just, I can't imagine anybody that's been in our government that's surpassed that. So God bless you, and thank you for your service. I'm not gonna hug anybody because I'm getting over a cold, but.
Absolutely. I mean, were you out? Did you outpace Don Weaver in terms of service?
A little bit. I was a little bit before Don came on the board.
Anybody along
and on the basketball here? Court, you outpaced them all.
Yeah, that's really amazing.
Actually, we were the champions.
That's right. Good.
We were.
Been very fortunate to have you.
Yes. Thank y'all very much. Appreciate that.
Ziegler's Booker.
You're welcome, Patricia.
service to the community. It's amazing. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, it's nice to, this is your third retirement.
Yes.
And I made connection with you years ago with Jerome, and I often say that Jerome used to talk about Linda because she, as a high school student, you came and you worked in different capacities. And I think that you saved the county when you moved in as treasurer. He always had good things to say about you. And he would always, every time you ran, he would endorse for something in the paper. So I know he's happy too. Along, and I, you know, whatever I say, I have to kind of include him because we both, you know, have gone through and know the same people. You're not far from me, so hopefully we'll have a chance to do some things together. And thank you for all you've done.
Thank you. Quite welcome. And thank you guys.
Thank you. So next, Mrs. Eager, we will have you get the spotlight here next. So again, thank you for your years of service. So with gratitude and deepest appreciation, Patricia B. Eager, for 8 years of dedicated service to the County of Savannah as the Palmyra District Supervisor, January 1, 2016 to December 31, 2023, serving as Vice Chair 2023 with steadfastness and integrity. Best wishes for a long and happy retirement from the Savannah County Board of Supervisors, Savannah County, Virginia.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Say that when Mrs. Eager first ran, she was very famous for delivering cookies, which is pretty much
yeah, I was the cookie candidate.
She was the cookie candidate. But she brought a lot of that skill to the board as well, too, in terms of just a real love and appreciation for Savannah. She worked hard, very diligent. She was attending lots of meetings all the time. You could see her everywhere. And she studied the facts and really, really took it on as a full-time job, I would say. And I think she's just been great to work with, great to the community, and we've been very fortunate. I will note that I believe, if the record is correct, both Mrs. Eager and Mrs. Booker are two of the three women who have served on the Savannah County Board of Supervisors. And so it's a loss to the community to not have that womanly touch, I think, and
I'm
that experience
as
well.
I'm so glad you said that. I'm just going to say that, but I'm glad you came
to Yeah, well, of course, I think with you and Jerome now, it's, of course, the first time in probably, what, 35, 40 years that we haven't had an African-American on the board. So, again, I think that's a real commitment of service to the community. So.
Yes, and I remember being very impressed with Patricia, Debbie Rittenhouse, and Elva Keith. Those three women on the Planning Commission, they knew what they were doing. I think it was the first time we put a survey. You all came up with a survey to survey the community, and it went in the tax ticket. And that's when we started gathering up all the information to see what did the community think about the where we were heading. So I guess I say, well, I see these three women doing such a wonderful job that I think I retired, and then I decided maybe I should step up too. It's been good to know you and good to sit by you here and see you as a friend, and I hope that we will continue seeing each other.
Well, I'd say that without you knowing it, you're the New Yorker Southern lady in the room. Like, mentally, you keep me in check on, like, if I'm about to get frustrated, and then I go, I don't think she'd like that out of me. And you are a woman of composure, and you are mannerly, and you treat everybody that way, and brings it out in others, and I mean that as genuinely as I could. So I appreciate that in you, and you've been a mentor.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
All right, Ms. Booker.
We can hold this until afterwards.
Okay.
And then, all right, Ms. Booker. All right, so with gratitude and deepest appreciation, Moselle H. Booker, for 16 years of dedicated service in the County of Fluvanna as the 4th Union District Supervisor. January 1, 2008. To December 31st, 2023, serving as chair 2014, 2015, and 2023. With steadfastness and integrity, best wishes for a long and happy retirement at the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors, Fluvanna County, Virginia. And again, thank you very much for your service.
It's been a pleasure working with you, Moselle. It's been great to sit with you and be your friend. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate everything you've done.
Thank you. Well, so I first knew Moselle.
Either
12 or 13, and we went with the choir group to Korea.
Yes.
And I remember it like it was yesterday. And to be still today, this many years later, being a part of this community with you, we haven't always agreed, but we've agreed a lot. And we agree that we love Fluvanna County, and we're still here serving. So God bless you for all you've done and all you'll do moving forward.
Can y'all believe that Chris Fairchild is singing and dance?
Hey, here's a microphone here.
The thoroughly modern magic.
Yes.
That's who they were. And they sang and they danced. And we traveled 24 hours to get to Seoul, Korea. And when they got there, the host families picked us up to go live with them. And the students got on the stage and performed in Korean language. You remember that?
Yeah.
Remember the song?
No.
thank you all so much. It's mixed feelings. It's sad. It's happy. It's grateful. But it's really the main thing. I'm blessed and honored. It's a blessing to be able to serve your community, to live here, to grow up here, and then to come back, and then to serve the community. So thank you all for giving me this opportunity to do this. Nothing any of us can do without the rest of us. I can't do anything unless I have 100% participation, or at least the majority. So I appreciate so many comments that I've had in the last couple of days. And like Linda said, I'm still in Fluvanna, and I'm going to lay low for a while and kind of reevaluate myself and see what is it that I want to go on to do. And I appreciate all of you all and everything that you've done. I can't say anything was terrible or bad. I think we have challenges, but we always work through them. And to the new board members that's coming, Mike will be sitting in Fork Union, and Tim, you will find out things, and you will listen, and you will learn, and you will be a contributor to make this county move forward. And I'm here to support you in any way.
Always the educator.
Yep.
Always. Thunder, but anybody who knows me knows that I have a great love and respect for Moselle. Apparently at Baco, I was very effusive about it. over and over and over.
Three times.
But she's just an amazing woman, and God, I'm so lucky to have had your service, so, and everything you've done. So.
Amen.
three amazing females retiring from Savannah, but not out of the community. So thank you for all you've done.
Thank you.
Great. Chair, members of the board, as soon as it wants to come up and cooperate. Okay, there we go. So just a few things to report on. So we have some new staff members starting. So at the top left, Eric Bryan is starting with the sheriff's office as a deputy sheriff. He started December 17th. The five on the bottom, new emergency services department, EMT BLS providers, they all started on December 18th. Gabriella Bondurant, Cheyenne Bondurant, Mackenzie Decker, Julie Hoffling, and Alexander Dillard. So certainly like to welcome them to Fluvanna County staff, and we're happy to have them on board.
Are the Bondurant sisters?
Yes, they are. Yeah. They are. That would be a really coincidental last name to have.
So how many have we hired so far? We probably don't have that right off the top of your head.
Jim, roughly, this spitball, how many?
As of this hire, we are now fully staffed.
Wonderful.
Amen.
Good.
Great job.
Yes. Yes.
So, I mean, we've probably hired easily over, since June, easily over 30 EMS providers.
That's
all time and part time.
Thank you.
So the past weekend we had the fourth annual community lights at Pleasant Grove Park, which was held December 14th through the 17th from 5 to 9 p.m. Parks and Rec had 19 displays for patrons to view. Previous years, last year, there were 21 displays and 15 displays. The year previous to that, Santa made an appearance on Saturday night from 5 to 8, meeting with 64 vehicles. And so traffic per night was Thursday 76, Friday 117, Saturday 202, and as everyone remembers, Sunday was a pretty rainy, dreary day, but we still had 43 dedicated light viewers out there for a total of 438 vehicles, and there was 472 last year. And again, Parks and Rec hopes to keep growing this event every year, so big kudos to all those that participated, and certainly Mr. Spitzer and his staff for all the dedicated hard work to provide something interesting and festive to go out and see in the community. There's a picture of kind of Pleasant Grove, the Pleasant Grove house in front with the lights and some of the inflatables. And so just a special thanks to some of the providers, Four Oaks Farm, Fluvanna 4-H Club to the right, Fluvanna 4-H Livestock with some livestock lit up on the bottom left, Fluvanna 4-H with the lit up love sign on the bottom right, Fluvanna Extension Office, top left, Fluvanna County Fair, top right, the Elephant Trunks, bottom left, Fluvanna Sheriff's Department, bottom right. We have Local Eats, FLA Baptist Church, Fork Union Military Academy, Loomsbury Roofing and Town Realty, Avenue Realty and J.L. Henderson Repairs. We have the Fluvanna Library, Ashley Morris, who's a dog trainer, Lori Click with Remax Realty, and Howard Hanna, Roy Wheeler Realty, and the Fluvanna Master Naturalist decorated the butterfly garden. So special thanks to everyone that participated. And some upcoming meetings we have. January 3rd, we have a 5 p.m. organizational and regular meeting. January 3rd, right after that, we have a solar work session, a joint solar work session with the Planning Commission. And just remember that evening, we will have, at 5 o'clock, we'll have the organizational meeting, and the board will be appointing, during that meeting, a new planning commissioner. Between 6:30 and 7, the Planning Commission will be then having their organizational meeting. During that time, well, they'll appoint, you know, chair, vice chair. And then literally going right into 7 p.m. is when we have the solar work session that evening. And then the next meeting after that, January 17th, we have a 5 p.m. nonprofit work session. And then at 7 p.m., we have a regular meeting. And I'm happy to answer any questions from the board.
Okay, any questions? If not, thank you, Eric. Next, we're going to have our first public comments. If you're here to speak, because we do have a public hearing, if you're here to speak on the public hearing, wait until we open that next. But if you have anything you want to talk to the board about, come to the lectern. You have 5 minutes. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is James Schoenster. I live at 843 Jefferson Drive in Palmyra. And I'm here once again to advocate for public comments being available via Zoom. I'm not the most tech-savvy person in the room, but my wife knows her stuff, and the first thing she asked me when I told her what had been happening was whether or not there was a password on the meeting. If that precaution had been taken and the bad actors were still getting in, I'd suggest we allow public comments via Zoom the same way we allow presentations from other parties, similar to the way it was handled at the last meeting. I know I've seen other folks presenting on the Zoom in certain capacities. I'm seeking a solution because it provides accessibility to those who might find 5 past 5 p.m. public comment sections difficult to attend or may be challenged to make it here to this podium at any time due to physical limitations. Last week perfectly demonstrated what we lose without that service. A resolution was made with the full approval of the board, and if you listen to the public comment section, it might appear that there weren't members of the Jewish community here in Flavanna that strongly opposed such a decision. I know, because a Jewish friend of mine shared those concerns with me. The board knows, because they read every submission made on the county website through my 2 cents. But the public didn't know, because the resolution was released days before the meeting, and getting here in time for public comment before the vote just wasn't feasible. They could have jumped on a Zoom call and been heard. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? If not, I'll close the first public comments and come back to the board. This evening we have a public hearing, and it is the SUP 2308 James River Water Authority. And we're going to have Douglas Miles in the community development, and Eric will be presenting that. But in the meantime, I always read, because we may have someone here who would like to have the opportunity to speak to this particular issue. And these are the rules. The purpose of this public hearing is to receive testimony from the public on certain resolution, ordinances, or amendments prior to taking action. A hearing is not a dialogue or debate. Its express prior purpose is to receive additional facts, comments, and opinions on subject items. And the speakers should approach the lectern so they may be visible and audible to the board. And each speaker should clearly state his or her name and address. All comments shall be directed to the board. All questions shall be directed to the chairperson. Members of the board are not expected to respond to questions, and respond to questions should be made at the chairman's discretion. Speakers are encouraged to contact staff regarding unresolved concerns or to receive additional information. Speakers with questions are encouraged to call county staff prior to the public hearing. Speakers should be brief and avoid repetition of previously presented comments. At the conclusion of the public hearing on each item, the chairman will close the public hearing. The board will proceed with its deliberation and will act on or formally postpone action on such item prior to proceeding to other agenda items. Further public comment after the public hearing has been closed generally will not be permitted. So now we will hear the SUP 2308 James River Water Authority. Mr. Miles.
Yes. Good evening, Chair Booker, Vice Chair Eager, board members, Mr. Dahl and Mr. Witten. We'd like to just go over staff's information providing this for you all tonight. So this is SUP 2308, James River Water Authority, a special use permit request in the A1 Agricultural General District to permit major utilities under section 22-4-2.2 on 75.5 plus or minus acres, known as tax map 61, section 1, parcel 6. That's the raw water intake and pump station location. And then the remaining parcels are tax map 53, section 8, parcels 54, 56, 58, 59, and 59A. And then tax map 53, section 11, parcels 6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 11A, and 19. And then tax map 53, section A, parcels 52, 53, 56A, and 76. And then tax map 61, section A, parcel 1, and tax map 61, section 1, parcels 1 and 2B. And these all comprise and have the below ground 24-inch raw water pipeline. These parcels are generally located along Primo Road, State Route 656, and also along East River Road, Route 6, located in the Columbia Community Planning Area, Rural Residential and Rural Preservation Districts, and within the Columbia and Fort Keenan Election Districts both. So it's basically just right there west of Columbia, that portion of the county. And Mr. Dahl will go over these a little more in detail in part of his presentation, but basically this encompasses the raw water intake and pump station area in the bottom center of the slide, and Cobbs Creek Reservoir intake is shown on the other side of the James River. And then the approximate water line alignment as it goes up Remo Road and then back down East River Road to the connection to existing utility lines for the system. It's a little bit closer look. You can see some of the parcels we just went over in the legal ad, but mainly the raw water intake and pump station area is shown here on this map, and then the alignment in a little more detail for the public. And then as it comes up Remo Road and kind of passes Gale Hill Road and then joins up with East River and then heads east towards Columbia. And then kind of coming into Columbia proper, just past the Ravana River there, and coming into that existing connection to utilities. So the important parts for us in planning were working with Mr. Dahl's office and JRWA overall. Just kind of some highlights from the staff report. The 2009 comprehensive plan was amended by the Flavanna County Board of Supervisors, by you all, back on November 20th, 2013, basically to allow and support this project that would be located in the eastern end of the county in what's designated at that time as rural preservation area. Coming along later on in the 2015 comprehensive plan, it's still calling for rural preservation and in some aspects, also like we said in the legal ad, the rural residential areas, which would support rural homes. And the 2015 infrastructure chapter also goes into further detail, including the 2015 JRWA raw water line map. And I'm not going to read through all this, but basically this information was very important for the JRWA to use and support and planning support and county overall support for the project at the Planning Commission level. That you all signed and executed some previous interjurisdictional agreements with LOISA and further going on. And then now the current comprehensive plan does find this in compliance with the plan for this request that's before you tonight in the public. So we just have two conditions that the Planning Commission and staff recommend for you all tonight: the construction and operation and the maintenance of the James River Water Authority, JRWA, raw water line and pump station, which shall comply with local, state, federal permitting requirements. And second, the vehicle access to all business, residences, and our farms along this from raw waterline route shall be maintained at all times, which the JRWA will do. The James River Water Authority, JRWA, and or its contractor shall be responsible, basically, for returning all the affected access points or mailboxes to equal for better conditions upon project completion, which they plan to do. This time, I'll turn it over to Mr. Dahl, if you all have any questions.
And so this is a little unusual. I'm representing the applicant as the James River Water Authority, again, with me being a board member of the James River Water Authority. And, you know, we've certainly, from the county's standpoint, we've been kind of leading a lot of the property acquisition pieces. Since this is a project in Savannah County, we want to make sure that we're treating Savannah residents right. But to go into the presentation itself, and again, I apologize, things are moving slow and loading slow this evening. So again, yeah, as Mr. Miles noted, this is the James River Water Authority's application for a raw water intake pump station and raw water line project. So one, for the James River Water Authority, I mean, pretty much it was created to be a long-term water source for Savannah and Louisa County. It supports each county's required 50-year water supply plan as outlined in their adopted water supply plans from 2010 to 2011. And just for the board's and public's knowledge, the permit capacity would provide for 8.57 million gallons per day, which is 50% for Savannah, 50% for Louisa County. With this project, it would remove reliance on wells and groundwater sources. It would help to assist with drought reliability. You know, back in 2002, there were drought conditions up in the county and in the area in general that, you know, having a surface water source would eliminate those types of issues. It certainly provides for economic development within both counties. And then also one benefit to the county too, it would have accessible fire hydrants, 13 of them along the route from Bremo Road going on Route 6. As Mr. Miles stated, the proposed improvements to the project would be one, the raw water intake, which is in the James River. It would have a raw water pumping station to be located on the Rose property on the James River. And then along the whole route, it would be a below ground 24-inch diameter raw water pipeline. Approximately 4 miles of water line would be running from the intake structure going back to the interconnection point on Route 6, connecting with the water line that goes up to Louisa County, which also then connects into Fluvanna County and Zions Crossroads system. The pump station includes an above-ground structure elevated above the existing floodplain grade, and then the raw water intake is a structure that will be located below grade in the James River. And so these are just some elevations, some different elevations of what the pump station structure would look like along the river. We've got a second picture that provides kind of more of a 3D model, but you can see most of the structure is above ground. It's almost on stilts. If you think about, like, thinking when you go to the beach, you got beach houses that are up high above kind of, you know, flood areas. That's kind of, you know, the same kind of premise to this a little bit. And then looking at the kind of the 3D rendering of this, again, you can see a lot of the equipment above grade in there. There would be a pumping equipment within the structure. And then there would be also a generator that is also located there for uninterrupted power supplies. And then just kind of the note, the colors in the illustrative, again, those are just, these are not final colors. You know, we will be working with the property owner. Again, the property owner that is on there, you know, can select different earth tone colors for the exterior masonry. And also the roof could be a tan or brown or something else, depending on what works best to kind of blend in with the surroundings there. As Mr. Miles showed, previously discussed, you know, again, this project originally started about right around the confluence of the James and Rivanna River with some permitting issues and some things that were brought to the James River Water Authority's attention through the permitting process. The project was moved 2 miles upstream to this location right there. And then again, as Mr. Miles noted, goes from this property on Route 656, Bremo Road, going back to Route 6, going Route 6 east, going over the Rivanna River. It's actually going under, below grade the Rivanna River, through the river, and then it would go to the interconnect point here, right there at Route 6. And so again, you know, Mr. Miles showed this screen of the parcels affected. I'm not gonna repeat all this, but I'm certainly happy to answer more questions on any of this if the board has questions. And then talking about the 2015 comp plan in Chapter 2 under Land Use and Community Design, it calls for commercial areas. In the comp plan, it says Fluvanna and Louisa County are working together to ensure that the infrastructure needs of the area are met. A joint water pipeline from the James River is in the final planning stages. That was back in 2015, and we're in 2023, and we're getting closer, but we're still, it's still a slow grind. Chapter 3 of the comp plan under infrastructure, it specifically references, there's a figure I-2, which references the James River Water Project. And then under Chapter 5 in economic development, it states the James River Water Authority is a cooperative body representing the water interests of Fluvanna and Louisa County. Just some things on project status. So the James River Water Authority does have our DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality permit that has been issued for the project. We are still waiting on the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers permit. Right now, there's a public comment period which ends tomorrow. As part of that permitting process, interested parties that have an interest in the project, they can make comments on it. Some of the interested parties that commented before that will want to comment again. Certainly the Monacan Indian Nation has been a part of this. We've been in lockstep with them, keeping them updated along the way. There's actually been a letter of support previously from the Monacan Indian Nation for this location. The Fluvanna Historical Society was a stakeholder that made comments before. They've been notified as well. Some others, I think the Virginia Navigation Society, and there's a few others. Along the whole project, phase one and phase two cultural resource surveys have been completed, which is basically doing, you know, shovel digs along the whole route every 50 feet, making sure there's no artifacts or anything like that. Well, again, artifacts may be found, but making sure there's no burial remains or anything like that, that would be a showstopper for the project. Phase three cultural resources firm has been selected. Again, can't move forward with that until the Army Corps of Engineers permit has been issued. Property acquisition and right-of-way easements are very well underway. We got along the entire route, most of the project is in along Bremo Road, is in the right-of-way. Along Bremo Road, but there are some property owners affected. We probably have along the whole Bremo route and going Route 6, we probably have at least 75%, if not more, of the right-of-way acquisition done. We've been working with the Roses for the intake structure for a fee simple purchase. And then right now, as the board approved previously, the letter of support for the James River Water Authority to move forward. The JRWA did sign a contract for final design and construction for the project. And I kind of think that's where we are. I also have Brian Reitman. He's with Faulkner Construction. The contract for the design and project is with Faulkner Construction. We also, underneath Faulkner Construction, we have subs that are working with Faulkner Construction for engineering, the Timmons Group, and then we also have the JRWA has a project manager working alongside us representing the JRWA, as well as we also have archaeological consultants that we've been working with, permitting legal attorneys and what have you. And so I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board has.
Okay, you have any questions?
So I'm always, you know, not being somebody who does this as a living, trying to figure out something like this, just the process confuses me.
Okay.
So with everything that's happened and all the money spent and everything, how do we get to an SUP just now coming in front of the board now? Like, what if this didn't get passed, and why wouldn't that happen? Why wouldn't all those, and I'm sure there's a reason, I'm not saying anybody did anything wrong,
yeah,
why wouldn't all those I's get dotted before all the money's invested and so on?
So to answer that question, there's lots of due diligence that has to be done along the route to make sure this is the viable route to go with. And so you don't want to get an SUP for that until you know that all those things have been checked off. Again, the phase one and phase two cultural resources, all the different surveys that have been performed, right away acquisition and all that. There's just lots of things throughout the permitting process that you want to make sure that this is a viable route. And we are at that point right now from the James River Water Authority where we've got our DEQ permit, our Army Corps of Engineers permit is moving forward. We are hoping we will have that sometime, probably in early, mid-spring, March time frame. So I think to answer your question specifically, it's to do all the due diligence up front to make sure there's nothing that would make this a non-viable project.
Because something could happen and you could push it off.
Well, I mean, I'll give a perfect example. Going back to the previous location, we went and we were at the previous location and did a lot of work at that location, and there were some things that were brought to the attention of the permitting agencies and to the JRWA that just made the project a not viable project at that location. There are some timings. Could you do this SUP a little bit sooner? I mean, you potentially could, but again, I think you want to make sure that a lot of the due diligence work is done up front to make sure that we're able to get those permits. And there's no showstoppers. Again, this has been a long, long, tedious, ongoing project, and, especially at this, as much early publicity that it had at the original project. We just want to make sure that we have all of our I's dotted and our T's crossed. We've been doing extraordinary property owner outreach. We've kept them informed along the way. As you see, I don't think there's, hopefully there's someone here to talk in support of it. But again, if you remember back at the previous location, it was a whole different story when an SUP was coming forward to the board for this project. And so we have, we've got a lot of public support from the landowners. And again, to have all those easements and right-of-ways in place and all the work that we've done, we feel like we're in a really good spot at this point, which I don't think we could have said that back when we were at the old location.
Would a 3-2 no on this SUP stop that project?
Yeah, it would involve a lawsuit too.
Whatever all the other stuff that comes from it, and that's actually helping make my point, that the board who voted for the water line is the most vested to vote in favor of the things that this board has control over. So to that point, a later board with different members that might go, you know what? Such a simple flick of the switch, we'll see that this thing won't happen. And yeah. I want a genuine answer to, would a 3-2 against this stop this water line for now?
I don't have to.
I mean, it would probably end the litigation and it would be up to the judge.
Yeah.
Decide whether that was fairly debatable.
So the answer is yes. Within our organization, it would until another organization, the courts, stepped in.
Tonight we have four members here, so that'd be a
pretty good one. We have a motion coming up pretty soon.
Well, in retrospect, when this first came up, even you can correct me, but I think Mrs. Eagle was on the board. Just had just come on the board at that point in time, and the board decided not to vote for it came and sued us. And so that, you know, resulted in further discussion and yet another motion, and then it was passed on that second motion. So we can't stop it. The practical reality is, at this point in time, I would disagree that the board members that have been part of the process have the most vested interest. The board has a vested interest because this has been a 40-year project, basically 50-year project, which with lots of bumps along the way. And at this point in time, you know, really millions and almost tens of millions of dollars have been spent, and it would be, you know, sort of political folly to put that to waste, knowing on top of that that there would be legal action. And the opinion at that point in time on the legal action was that not only would we lose, because the contract with the JRWA between the counties was already in place, but we would lose and we would be responsible for paying the fees, and we wouldn't have any access to the water. But we would essentially lose everything. And so it made no sense.
I have an observation, and this is a 50-year project. Based on how long it's taken to get just as far as we are, it's more than 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we might want to be thinking about what we're going to do in 50 years.
And,
I mean, whether it's a reservoir or
we just right this
shouldn't stop looking into the future of what our county needs will be. And I don't know if you're going to call it JRWA, but I think it should continue to research.
Because that 8 million gallons may not be enough.
Well, and I mean, it has been the work of, you know, the last three boards and of course the previous board, but really to the point where it was at the fruition, where action was being taken, dollars were being spent, for the last 12 years now. And so much progress has been made in the sense that we now have, you know, a water authority that we didn't have before. You know, we have a public works water department, we have a master water sewer plan. We have water in Zion's Crossroads from the DXR project, and now this is, you know, the part that's going to finally come into play at the end. So it's exciting.
Yeah, I'm
painful.
I think I should just leave it this, but my question is more around process and time, and something like this that has virtually no cost. You know, I'm not sure that I would vote for this water line if I was on the board at the time. It is not a great strategist that would say that the people, you're more likely to get the right votes for the people who originally voted for it on the votes that come after, from those people. And it's odd to me that after all this amount of time, that something so small could stop this. And it literally would come down, and there's people that would make a claim to, you know, I was elected to stop this or whatever it is. And, you know, what may after. And it's interesting to me that such a small part of such a big project that's so expensive, that could be stopped at this point when it doesn't really have a great expense to it. So it makes me wonder why we wouldn't, it doesn't have a big investment to doing the SUP. So it makes me wonder why that wouldn't be done as soon as possible. If I was strategically on the side of it going, I want to make sure I eliminate every possible stop to this as quickly as I can, I wonder why that wouldn't happen far before this, because it has no great burden tied to it. So it just made it just interesting to me that something that seems like such a small piece that could have such a devastating effect so far into it.
To your point, it did happen, right? I mean, that's the thing is, there was actually a really speedy process that was put in place to try to get to the point, and then that was essentially, you know, there was a delay because the special use permit being rejected at that point in time, and then of course there was a further delay because of the litigation with the Monacan Nation, and those two delays really pushed that process to the point where it just took even almost 5 years just to get this JRWA back to the point where it was actually to start moving forward again with the project while that litigation was being resolved. But initially, yeah, that initial route line, that process went through actually very quickly.
And just to clarify, there wasn't litigation with the Monigans. There was just, again, we were going through the permit process and the stakeholders, the Section 106 permit process. And so interested parties have an opportunity to speak and then provide comments to the Army Corps of Engineers on things that could be detrimental to the permit or to those that have a stake in the land and then whatever. So,
sure, he's a term
negotiator.
Yeah,
yes.
And when the first year I was on the board, 2008, we had a proposal with Luis and Fluvanna for the, that was when the intake was at Brema, of bringing the water up 15, coming off of 15 and going to Zion's Crossroad. And that was a $25 million for Fluvanna and $25 million for Luisa. And that we were pushed away from that when the economy fell. I mean, remember 2008, everything was taken. And that board, I heard, and I was on the board, and I know Marv and a couple other people, that they felt that that was a mistake, that we didn't move forward with it. And not, we got frightened because of what was happening to the economy. And if we had gone forward, we would have had water by now and cheaper. And then a lot of people now will say, well, I don't see why you all didn't go on up, come on up 15 and bring the water. Why are you doing, why did we move it down to Columbia? So, you know, who knows what's right, what's wrong, what could have happened, whatever. It's just that we are on, seem to be on the right track now. Hopefully, and so I hope we will get it done.
Fair question.
Yes. Do you have anybody else want to speak? If not, I'll open the public hearing. I'm opening the public hearing right now. Anyone would like to speak to this SUP, to this project, please come to the lectern, give your name and address, and you have 5 minutes. I see no one, so I will close the public hearing and come back to the board. Anything else from board members? We're ready for the motion.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve SUP 2308 Changer of Water Authority, a special use permit request in A1 Agricultural General District to permit major utilities under Section 2.2-4-2.2 on 75.5 plus or minus acres, known as Tax Map 61, Section 1, Parcel 6, raw water intake and pump station. Tax Map 53, Section A, Parcels 54, 56, 58, 59, and 59A. Tax Map 53, Section 11, Parcels 6, 7, 8, 10, 11, 11A, and 19. Tax Map 53, Section A, Parcels 52, 53, 56A, and 76. And Tax Map 61, Section A, Parcel 1, and Tax Map 61, Section 1, Parcel 1 and 2B, that have a below-ground 24-inch raw water pipeline along with the two recommended case conditions found in the staff's report.
All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, any other discussion? I'll take the vote. If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Chair votes aye, and we have one board member absent, Mr. Sherman. Okay, thank you. We'll move on to action matters. Authorization to advertise a public hearing to amend Section 20-1-5 of the County Code. Attorney Dan Whitney presents this.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. So this issue came up just a few weeks ago when a refund came across my desk. The cumulative amount was over $2,500. So I realized that the county code had never been updated in 2022 when the General Assembly code section was changed to increase the amount that the treasurer could refund without board approval to $10,000. It was previously $2,500 and then it changed to $5,000 a couple years ago, and then in 2022 went up to $10,000. So the proposal is to amend County Code Section 20-1-5 to raise the authorized refund amount from $2,500 to $10,000. The treasurer would have the authority to approve the refunds up to $10,000 without approval of the Board of Supervisors upon certification of the Commissioner of Revenue with the consent of the county attorney that such refund is the result of an erroneous assessment. So the way we do it now, only it's under $2,500, is the Commissioner of Revenue sends a form signed, and then I sign off on the form, and it has the reasons for the refund, and then that goes to the treasurer who then issues the refund. So normally the refund's due when the residents moved out of the county prior to the tax year, and they're being taxed in another locality, or the owner is qualified for disabled veterans relief during the tax year. The treasurer would still report the refund to the board by the end of the month in which the refund is issued. Okay. Are there any questions about this code change?
Do I understand right that the county, if they weren't moving out, the county can sit on that money until they move?
What do you think?
The part about, I was confused about it.
Was it in the slide, Mr. Fairchild, or just in the...
That normally the refund is due when the resident has moved out of the county.
Oh, so that'd be, let's say I lived in the county, and then next week I move out of the county, I move to Alamo. So basically, I changed my domicile to Alamo, but Levanna does not realize that, because sometimes DMV is slow getting the information to Levanna. So if Levanna taxes the person for their car and property, and Alamo does as well, and I show that I paid my taxes in Alamo. And so a lot of times someone might pay the taxes in Levanna as well because they don't want the penalty.
Sure.
And so then they come back and say, hey, I paid my taxes in two different places. So then the treasurer issues a refund for the amount that was paid. That's the more common situation. I mean, disabled veterans are just another common situation.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Okay, we have a motion.
I move that Board of Supervisors advertise the amendments to the County Code to amend Section 20-1-5 for a public hearing to be held January 17th, 2024.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, motion was made by Mrs. Eager and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. One person is absent. Now we have appointments. We have appointments for Java and what was the other?
Just Java.
Just Java.
Yep. Okay. And we just have one individual.
Well, we have one that's reappointed.
Yep.
Brenda's daughter, right?
That's
Brenda's daughter.
That's
Brenda's
daughter. Brenda. Armstrong. All right. So we have Wanda Armstrong. For the Java Board of Directors as the Levanna Citizen Representative. And her resume, I think she put her resume.
Would you like a motion?
Yes, please.
Okay, I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following Java Board of Directors, Levanna Citizen Representative, Wanda Armstrong. Term begins 12/2023 and ends 6/30/25.
Okay, we have a second.
Okay, a question.
Question.
So, Paul was the current member?
Who?
Paul Bevins?
No, Moselle Booker.
No, but who's?
Paul Bevins is I thought that was something else.
I think he moved out.
Yeah.
He's replacing.
I was
an unexpired term.
Wanda
is. So what's he on there for?
Is that a
it's an unexpired term. He left the county.
Yes.
Paul Bevins left the county. Yeah. She is filling an unexpired term for Paul Bevins.
Yes. He left the county and moved.
Okay, so that's what, okay, that's what I was trying to figure out.
Yeah, he loved it. He was on the...
It's, the relationship is from Paul to somebody filling it out.
Correct.
Okay, and he left the county, so it's a...
He left the county, he was in this role, he left the county, so the board has to fill the unexpired term of Paul.
That's what I was looking for, thank you, Kevin.
Okay, so do we have a second?
I'll say.
All right, we have a motion by Mrs. Eager and a second by Mr. Fairchild, all in favor? Anyone opposed, chair votes aye, anyone absent, okay? And now we have a presentation. Fiscal year 23, annual comprehensive financial report by Ms. Curry Nelson.
Just let Zoom hear me. Good evening.
Hi, Tori.
So I'm gonna, this evening, I'm gonna discuss the fiscal year 23 annual comprehensive financial report. But before we get into that, I'm gonna start with a brief budget summary. Next slide, please. Okay. So here for FY23, we'll see that the total adopted budget was 98 million. And this shows the total expenditures that we budgeted for in FY23, with schools being 52 million, county coming in at 38.3. And there, I will note, there is a correction that needs to be made. The CIP number did not update, so that 25.5 is incorrect. It should actually show 4.3, and then other coming in at 3.1.
The 25.5 was actually a fiscal year 22 number, and so as an update to slides, that one didn't.
You didn't say. Okay. So total revenues in 23 that we budgeted for, we expected to receive 36 million from the state, local at 53, federal at 6 million, and other coming in at 2.7. Next slide. So this is the adopted budget for local dollars only. So revenues, we budgeted to receive 11 million in personal property, public service at 4.1, real estate at 25.1, other local at 7.5, and then fund balance at 3. Next slide. Now we'll get into the annual comprehensive financial report. Next slide. So in FY23, general fund revenues totaled 41.8, and federal came in at 2.3, state came in at 8.7, local at 5.2, and all others came in at 3.2. So on the next slide, you'll see where we show FY22 actuals came in at 57.7. We had an amended budget of 61.4, and actual revenues came in at 61.5, which was an overall increase to the budget that we didn't budget for, 121,000, sorry. Next slide. So our top four local revenues that you can see are real estate, personal property, public service, and local sales tax. For FY23, for real estate, we received 27 million. For personal property, 10.6. For public service, 3.5. And for local sales, 2.8. This graph just shows you from FY14 to FY23, the overall increase each year. Next slide. So general fund expenditures, this just shows you in FY23 where we expended our dollars. So you can see education came in at number one, being 17 million. Second would be public safety at 10.5. Third was our debt service at 9.2. And health and welfare came in number four at 6.6. And then we had some small other ones. So public works was 2.7, judicial 1.6, general government 3.4, parks, rec, and library came in at 1.1, community development 673,000, and non-departmental at 48,000.
Just one thing to add to Ms. Melvin's slide. So the education, obviously, this is just talking about general fund expenditures. So the 17 million for education, obviously their budget's more than 17 million. This is what the county provides for actual dollars against the school's budget. That's the 17.7 million. Okay. That was actuals.
Next slide. And this slide again shows you what our actuals were for FY22 at 52 million. We had an amended budget of 61. and our overall actual expenditures for 23 came in at 53.8. So we were under budget by 7.5 million. But this slide will also show you where some of those monies weren't able to be expended for whatever reasons. So like health and welfare was a big one at 2.4 and education at 2.3.
And the biggest piece of that too, to note, this is not necessarily all county fund dollars when you're looking at health and welfare. So we had budgeted for ARPA funds, and so we got ARPA funds in, but we haven't spent all the ARPA funds. So that's the biggest piece. ARPA kind of falls under health and welfare. When you look at education, the $2.3 million, that's, as you remember, the schools ended up with about $2.3 million unexpended, but about $1.8 million of that $2.3 was state money that they got for school construction funds. And then the other differential, which they came to get carryover, was about $500,000. So again, all this 7.5 is not all like local county tax dollars. It's mostly a lot of federal and state money.
Thank you. Next slide, please. So the year ended June 30th of 23. We had total revenues of $61.5 million. Our expenditures came in at 53.9. So excess over revenues on expenditures was 7.5. And we had money that would transfer out for CIP, Zions Crossroads, sewer came in at 2.1. So the overall change in general fund would be 5.4. So the fund balance at the beginning of the year was 32.5, and at the end of fiscal year 23 was 38 million. Next slide. So general fund balance as of June 30, we had non-spendable coming in at $6,689. We had restricted at $117,000. Committed funds was $11.3 million. So we had an unassigned came in at $26,500. So that shows you the total overall general fund of that $38 million. So per policy, we have 12% above that. So we have 11.1 that is reserved. And then excess above target is going to be $15.3 million. So those are the funds we can use on things like CIP.
So that as the board moves forward into the budget process and throughout the year, the 15.3, again, you get a memo in each package that shows what that kind of unassigned is for the board to use. So that 15.3, that is the new audited number for what the county can utilize for CIP projects and other expenditures. And then again, you got, as Ms. Melton stated, 11.2 is like the emergency rainy day fund, don't touch. It's like, you got to have it there. So
it could be used to reduce taxes the following year, right?
The 11.1?
The 15.
You could, yeah.
And this slide just shows you, it's again those numbers that I just spoke on, that the non-spendable, unassigned, committed CIP, and unreserved, it's just a chart showing those amounts. This just gives you, again, the overview between fiscal year 14 to 23, the total fund balance, and the increases and decreases in unassigned fund balance. And you'll see for FY23, it's kind of dipping down a little bit, but that's due to unassigned fund balance. We had more committed funds for CIP.
Yeah, the big thing is there's been more projects that were approved, but they weren't expended this year. And so you've got this money that's been committed for projects, but because it just... Again, like fire trucks being delayed, ambulances, you know, sheriff's vehicles, that's and some other projects. That's kind of why money's been committed, but it hasn't been spent. The board has approved it for a certain thing, so it's kind of committed.
Well, one big number, correct me if I'm wrong, is that James River Water projected costs are still basically under unassigned, uncommitted.
No, James River Water Authority is not included in this, and it's not committed. There is no money committed necessarily for James River Water Authority. The James River Water Authority, again, we got the Dominion dollars that again,
right.
We're going to have a further conversation with the board. Just as a note, if you remember, we got the proffer money from Dominion. There was an advance in that proffer of $2.1 million. We actually just got that this month, so... So money is starting to come, and once they get their, once Dominion gets their permits and everything, then that close to $50 million is then actually realized for the county at that point. And I don't expect that they're not going to get their permit from the agencies that they need it from.
Next slide, please. So the next slide just shows you our outstanding debt. It shows that in FY22, we had outstanding at 89.1. And at the end of FY23, we had 82.1. So that was an overall 8% decrease.
And so just from the board standpoint, I mean, again, we didn't issue any debt in fiscal year 23. And there was no new debt issued. It was issued in 22. So you can see just from a principal spend down, you know, we reduce our debt by about $7 million. That's what we pay in actual principal payments every year. So that's the principal buy down. So if the board didn't, and there's some few further charts that she'll show, but that's, if you don't take out any extra debt, that's kind of the trajectory at this point.
Are you going to show where that debt is?
Yep, Ms. Milton has some slides, right?
So this shows you the blue being school projects, mm-hmm. the red being county projects, and the green being water. Okay. And those are our outstanding debts, and you can see, as you can see, they decrease mm-hmm. each year with a significant drop in 25.
2035. My next house will be 91. 93, I believe. Y'all, we don't be in here.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the numbers in 2022 and 2021 were hovering right around 100 million or so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we kind of went to 105 million, maybe.
I think that was probably about the peak, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this slide also shows you the annual debt service, which includes, again, school projects, county projects, and enterprise.
So you can see, you know, a majority of the debt service, as the board's not surprised, is related to the school projects, that drops off in 2036.
So you have $1.2 million drop in 2025.
Yeah, we've got, I mean, so this budget cycle, yeah, we've got a big drop. And again, it was discussed about, you know, We had baked in fund balance to kind of be a placeholder for any debt that was going to be issued at any point. Again, we balanced the budget with the fund balance for the debt, but we haven't taken out the debt yet. So it wasn't a loss necessarily, but we didn't necessarily have to increase the tax rate to do that. And now we have the big capital project from the radio system. That debt drop is dropping off. We were paying about $1.1 million a year.
And that was going to count projects.
It was correct, yes. Correct.
And if you don't have any questions for me, I will turn it over to Dave Foley.
Any questions? Ms. Melvin?
Thank you.
Thank you. How do you do, sir?
Good. How are you doing?
Fine.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. Thanks for having me here this evening. My name is David Foley. I'm a partner with Robinson Farmer Cox Associates, and we perform the audit for the county's financial audit for the county's fiscal year ended June 30th, 2023. And so here we've completed that audit, so I'm here to present the results of that to you all. Before I get into the results of the audit, just would like to give a brief overview of the audit that we do for the county as far as
all. Can everyone hear him? Okay, pull your mic up a little bit.
Okay. Just would like to give you a brief overview of the audit that we do for the county when we audit the financial statements. There's really three main pieces to the audit that we do. Of course, one is we audit the financial statements to make sure that the county's financial statements have been prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. And then the other two pieces of the audit we do in accordance with government auditing standards, one of which is, in addition to just looking at the numbers themselves, as part of the audit, we consider and gain an understanding of the internal controls that the county has over its financial reporting. We do this for the purposes of designing our tests over the financial statements, and you know, we will gain an understanding of those controls, and in certain cases may test those controls as part of doing our audit procedures. And then the third piece of the audit is the federal compliance piece. So anytime a organization or a locality expends over $750,000 in federal grant funds, you have to undergo what's called a single audit. And so when we're out doing the audit as part of that work, for the major federal programs for both the counties and the school board, we'll look at the compliance over those programs. So basically OMB provides a compliance supplement with a list of various compliance requirements that the county and school board have to comply with when they're expending the federal grant program. So we'll go through that checklist to make sure that the county and schools are compliant with those federal grant requirements. So those are the three main pieces of the audit that we do. So as such, included in the annual report, there's three different reports from us that communicate the results of the audit. The first is in the financial section of the report. It's a numbered page 20. And the first report here is our independent auditor's report. And in this report from the state, we did perform an audit on the county's financial statements. And there's also where we issue our opinion on the county's financial statements. And we have issued an unmodified opinion on the county's financial statements. An unmodified opinion is the cleanest opinion in order to give on the set of financial statements. Basically, an unmodified opinion means that the county's financial statements have been prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. The other two reports from us are in the back of the report in the compliance section. The first report is on page 196.
We have our report.
This is our report over, the first report back here is our report over the county's internal controls over financial reporting. This report was clean as well. We noted no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in the county's internal controls over its financial reporting. And then the third and final report from us is two pages over on page 198. This is our report over the county's compliance with its major federal grant programs. This report was clean as well. We noted no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in the county's compliance with its major federal grant programs. Also, there were no items of noncompliance noted as part of the audit. So again, all three reports from us were clean, so it was a clean audit for the county. In addition to the three reports that we include in the annual report, there's some communications that we have to make to you all at the end of an audit. We do so in the form of a governance letter. Just would like to go through those with you all. Just a few items, a few qualitative aspects of accounting practices. And we state that management is responsible for the selection and use of appropriate accounting policies. Accounting estimates are an integral part of preparing the financial statements. Some examples of some more of the significant estimates that are included in preparing the financial statements is management's estimate of depreciable lives that's used to calculate depreciation expense in the financial statements. Also, the management's estimate of the pension and other post-employment benefit liability that has to be recorded in the financial statements. These estimates are actually prepared by an actuary that provides these estimates to the county. Just a few more communications. Difficulties encountering performing the audit. We had no difficulties in dealing with management and performing the audit. If we had any difficulties, we'd have to disclose those to you all. Really, Tori, Eric, and all the county and school staff do an excellent job of working with us during the audit. Us do a good job of having a list of documents, a bunch of documents ready for us when we come on site to to start working with. And in addition, while we're on site for the audit, they do an excellent job of answering any questions that we have and also pulling any additional documents that we request while we're out in the field. You know, we certainly know and understand that staff have their normal jobs they're dealing with during the day. And when you have four auditors walking in and out of your office asking for stuff and asking for questions, we know that can be a chore sometimes. And the staff always is very cooperative and working with us and doing an excellent job in getting the information that we need. Corrected or uncorrected misstatements. There were no uncorrected misstatements as part of the audit. Any adjustments that we proposed have been made by management and been included in the county's accounting system, so that way the county's accounting system agrees to the numbers that are included in the audited financial statements. Disagreements with management. We had no disagreements with management in terms of any accounting, auditing, or reporting items. If we had any, we'd have to, again, disclose those to you all. Management representations. We do request certain representations from management. At the end of an audit, we get this in form of a signed letter. And then lastly, management's consultations with other independent accountants. As far as we're aware, management did not consult with any other independent accountants in terms of second opinion shopping. And again, those are just the required communications that we have to make to you all at the end of an audit. But that's all I have, but be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Do you have any questions for Mr. Fuller? Anyone? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mrs.
Melton, second.
This is mostly, I mean, her first full year of kind of overseeing the finance department. And, yeah.
Good for her.
Very good.
And I think, as far as I can recall, that we had unmodified reports every year. So I think testament to the county's financial staff there. Congratulations to Ms. Melton.
Certainly the Ms. Melton and the finance department and HR and schools and social services and the treasurer's office, and you know, when the auditors come, as Mr. Foley noted, it's it can be a little bit of a surge sometimes to get everything done.
Right, and you could be here for how long?
We're here about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So we come for a while and mm-hmm. do our tests, and then we go away for a little bit, and then we come back to finish. So
yes.
2 weeks can, like I said, that can
be
a long.
That's 2 weeks of your life.
That's right. there's a lot of good places to eat in Fluvian County.
Okay, so if there are any questions, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Right, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now. Levant County Staff Opinion Survey, Mr. Law.
Yep, Madam Chair, members of the board. So again, towards the, right around the end of November, we put out a staff opinion survey that went out. And so I'll kind of just go over some of the results high level. So again, so the number of survey responses we received were 84. I think the number was we have 196 full-time staff. So out of that full-time percentage, it was about 42% of staff responded. Just in terms of general surveys and stuff like that, kind of standards, it's usually right around, if I remember correctly, usually right around 33% is kind of the average of survey results. I think online was a little bit less. Obviously, there's lots of different survey methods, from phones to online to what have you. But again, right around 30% is kind of the standard. So as the survey went out, there was about 15 questions of kind of just general questions. And staff was to rate it 1 through 5, with 1 being the lowest, 5 being the highest for the first 15 questions. And then question 16 through 19, it was rated 1 through 10, obviously 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest.
And so, just looking at this page right here, so kind of looking at questions 1 through 15, so these percentages represent the number of staff that marked a 4 or a 5, basically being above that mark. So you can see on there 68% treated with courtesy, 62% right supplies and equipment to do the job, 67% enjoying being part of this organization, 61% my performance evaluated as fairly as possible, and 69% I'm happy with my job. Looking at, and then from there we go down to lower percentages from there. And so in this area, again, 60% say training I receive here helps me do my job, do a better job. 54% the county is dedicated to providing quality services. 52% free and open communication is encouraged. 56% appropriate attention is given to safety of employees. And then 60% I have the opportunity to attend job related training and conferences. And the below areas are areas for continued focus and improvement. 46% of those that rated that mark 4 or 5 said problems are handled fairly. 36% staff members are appropriately recognized for job accomplishments. 43% I hear about changes to policies or procedures. 38% I have the opportunity to contribute to changes in policies, procedures. And then 44% Urbana County promotes equal opportunity for all staff members. So remember, all these percentages are those that marked a 4 or a 5 on the survey. So this is just kind of a rehash, and again, to provide, you know, a good baseline. We use the same questions that were provided in previous surveys. So going back to 2012 to current, so previous surveys shows the number of responses, the month and year that it was done. And again, as I noted earlier, strongly disagree was one. One's lower, five's higher. And then down below, as I said before, it's question 16 through 19, one's lower, 10's the best. And so again, you know, certainly items, so the way we look at it for the top section, I think anything below a 3, anything below that threshold are things that we certainly want to look at. And you can see going back to 2012 and other years, some items that scored below that 3. So if you look at the current year, December of 2023, staff members are appropriately recognized for job accomplishments. The average of all the scores was 2.99%. And then I'm not going to read all those scores down. And then certainly I have the opportunity to contribute to changes in policies, procedures. That was rated 2.95. And then down below, rating the organization and looking at previous surveys as well. You know, as I said, anything below a 6, you know, those are things we certainly want to look at. And then again, you know, how is overall staff morale for Urbana County employees? It's rated a 5.52, and then you can see the rest of the numbers there. Let me go to the next one. And so another one of the survey questions was, I believe it is important, either one, to increase employee pay, B, increase county contributions to employee health plans, or C, both are of equal importance. And you can see the percentages there. The majority thought both are of equal importance. Looking at my supervisor evaluates my job performance on a yearly basis, you can see the percentages there as well about yes, using the county's performance appraisal, yes, using something else, yes, verbally, or no. And then finally, in the survey, there was just, you know, we had one question. The county has something called an EAP program, is it called? It's called an employee assistance program, which could provide like confidential counseling in person or online, and, you know, resources, as it states, to support a work-life balance and emotional health needs. And so it showed that only of the number of respondents, that 91% have not been utilizing that service. So I think that's all that I have for questions. Certainly there was in the board package, there was some comments related to, you know, what could the what could be done for training or additional programs. And then there then there's one additional question about additional comments, and those responses were provided to the board as well. So I'm happy to answer any questions for the board, and I can go back to any of the slides, and the board wants to see any of the other slides.
So on the additional ones that we got tonight,
yep.
I think I had gotten confused. Did you say that you had attached those to the email to the board before tonight?
Yes.
I didn't see them because I kept looking at the attachment, and all I saw were the questions through responses to question number 23. But did everybody else get through 24, the ones that we have printed here?
Yeah.
I don't know how come I couldn't find them.
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely attached it to the email.
Okay. Why the, it's just the curiosity thing.
You do want me to go back to a particular screen?
On the lines of questions. Why were the first ones, did we get this as a template from an org, did we buy this, or is this something we created?
This was what has been used previously within the county. So again, to provide just kind of a baseline of what staff has rated previously, we use the same. I don't know where it originated from.
Is it the same from 2012 through today?
The questions are identical.
Okay.
Identical questions. So there's no variation to the questions whatsoever.
Okay. So why are 1 through 15, you wouldn't know, I guess. Well, but I mean, you could have made a decision this time. Why those are 1 through 5 and the other are 1 through 10?
I don't have a really good answer for you on that. I don't know, again, with not knowing where the survey was, what came from, and not knowing how that was extracted. I mean, again, we could have, you know, could we have done those same questions 16 through 19 or 1 through 5? I mean, I think we could. I mean, again, I'm not a survey specialist, and so I don't know some of the means and methods and some of the best practices of surveys of, you know, is there a methodology for using a 1 through 10 through a 1 through 5? You know, do employees rate it differently? Certainly the way I looked at it, obviously if you go 1 through 5, and so if you say, you know, anything as a 3, to me 3 and below is 60% or lower. And so if you just extrapolate that times 1 through 10, that's where I say if anything 6 below, you know, just doubling all those numbers below is kind of the 60% mark below that. So, I mean, I think, yes, you probably could have done a 1 through 5 for the below ones, but I was trying to provide the board just kind of an apples-to-apples comparison of what was previous surveys.
Yeah. And that's the average score.
That's the average of the 84 responses. Those are the average scores of the 84 responses.
And so part of the reason I wondered, so on 1 through 15, so a couple inches, and you know, when you're looking at data, you're just trying to find trends.
Yeah.
And so a little bit, when one group of questions is 1 through 5 and another group is 1 through 10, the trend has been skewed a little bit because now you're dealing with different numbers, and 1 through 10, there's more chance of variance than there is 1 through 5. So one of the things I picked out is that between 2016 and between 2016 and 18, every single category went up.
Mm-hmm.
Between 2018 and 23, every single category went down.
Yep.
Not a line item that was off. And so then kind of went through and started picking out, I mean, that brings up its own questions. And because I even look back and go, well, 16 to 18 was Steve was here, right, for
correct.
Both of those. And then, so when I do averages from 18 to 13, 18 to 23, the ones that went down, one went down 14%. Others, a number of others were 13, down to 11%, and so on. Overall, 9.9 or 10%, there's a 10% reduction in the scores from 18 to 23. So one could say, does that mean, because it's all about gauging morale, so does that mean there's a 10% reduction in morale? I don't know that that's the outright way to look at it, but you know, it's all about, it's less than what it was. And then, but then you go, when you go from, when it's that consistent up top, then you go down to going 1 to 10, those questions come down to 7.5% that they're down compared to 10. So for future reference, I think it may be good to go to the same baseline. And then when we figure out what we analyze and what we try to figure out based upon just that without any of the answers to the questions where they're able to elaborate, to me it's, okay, there's a 10% change in morale, and then you pick out the items that seem to be the heaviest hitters. I mean, some are 14 and some are 4.
Yeah, but you see how many people responded, though.
But you got to take what you can, what you get.
Yeah.
I mean, more people, you don't know what the others are thinking.
Yeah, more people. And 12 and 14, you know, right when people responded. And there's been a decrease in 16.
Yeah, I'm not going to make any. I'm not going to make any excuses for why they went down. I mean, certainly, I wish there was some things that were either on level or went up. I mean, why did they go down? I mean, certainly, I could project and figure out some of them. Some of them, again, if someone provides a really low response, and maybe someone that's happy didn't provide a response. I mean. You know, that'll certainly affect the survey, but again, the survey results are the survey results, and,
right.
and we got what we have, and that's what I have to work with. And,
oh no, I agree. Yeah. It's the others that didn't choose to participate, yes. Then you know, maybe you shouldn't complain. Or
why do people not participate? We have to try to look at that.
But to the data we have.
Yep.
The data we have, and we shouldn't go through the process or expense or whatever of doing a survey if we're not going to analyze the data that we get at. So we know that there's roughly, it could be COVID, who knows?
Yeah.
I know there's roughly a 10% drop in morale if you use the data that the people gave us. We knew it wouldn't be full if we still chose to make decisions or have thoughts based upon the data that, the information that people give us. And so, I mean, we do have valuable data. We can look at line 3, is staff members are appropriately recognized for job accomplishment. Well, line 3 is the only one that had a 14% dip from 18 to 23.
Yep.
It can't be said that it's not somewhere to at least wonder about. So it is valuable information. We've gone to the effort and expense to get it, we shouldn't ignore it. We should use what we've been given by the employees that expect us to.
And that's why we get it, so we do have it.
One thing that wasn't clear to me is at the beginning you say the survey might apply to staff members from constitutional offices.
Yeah, this
across the board.
This would apply to Department of Social Services. This would apply to the, you know, constitutional officers. You know, and there's some that, you know, some staff that I don't oversee, and there's some that I do. I mean, so I don't know which ones do or don't are reporting on this. I mean,
and I understand that you explained that, you know, anonymity is important.
Correct.
Some of these departments can be relatively small.
I mean, again, when the results come in, all that comes in, you get a date stamp of when the results came in, and then you get, you know, all the data. That's it. You know, we're not trying to, we want to make it as anonymous as possible. We're not, you know, we're not collecting emails or anything like that, or so.
So the comments are more important that you can deal with than looking at the numbers.
I mean, I think it's all important to look at.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're going to do a survey, then you need to know what you're going to do with it, because the people need to have some feedback. What's going to happen? Will you see some changes, or?
Well, I mean, if you look at the ones that were in red, just using those as an example about the, staff members are appropriately recognized for job accomplishments or the mm-hmm. opportunity to contribute to changes in policies or procedures. The one thing is, we haven't done a lot of changes in policies or procedures, but I mean, certainly, we used to have some things in place where, there was a method for staff in different departments or representatives to provide feedback for things that are going on. And certainly, that's one of the things to kind of resurrect again and make sure that there's a representative of those departments that have feedback on what's going on from, whether it's pay or whether it's a any type of program that the county's offering, or whether it's there's a policy that a personnel policy or something that the county's doing they don't think is maybe needs some tweaking or changing and stuff like that. So I think that's what the survey provides. It provides some valuable decision points to go back and look at.
Absolutely, and I think 2012 was obviously when there's enormous staff turnover. And so there was a rebuilding period going on there. The gap between 2018 and 2023, you have to take into account how COVID might have affected departments and leadership inside the departments, just in terms of day-to-day operations and regular communication. So, it's sort of a shame that we have such a big gap between the two. And I'd certainly like to see at least every 2 years a survey being performed.
I mean, the one thing I was certainly thinking of is maybe trying to get one done and, again, do one maybe in, like, June of 25, a year and a half from now, kind of right towards the end of that fiscal. I mean, unless the board says they want to see something different.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing between 2018 and 2023, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Steve was still on the board, still the county administrator in 2018, 19.
Correct. I became county administrator July of 2019.
2019. So, and then shortly thereafter, you have COVID. And so, one of the things that kind of struck me, and I understand Mr. Fairchild's point of saying, there's a 10% drop if you would look at it from that perspective. I look at it a little bit more generically and say that the numbers are pretty much staying on average, somewhere between 3 and 3.4 or something like that, if you were to look at it. So there's not huge variations year over year if you look at those big things, even though there's a different style of leadership and even though there were other things that happened in between. If we take Steve's leadership and the experience as a leader for almost 30 years in the military or something along those lines versus yours, versus also starting off and then getting right into COVID. And this is not reflective of just your leadership, it's everybody's leadership. While it points to areas for improvement, there's nothing that makes me go, oh my goodness, we've got to rebuild the ship or something along those lines. But definitely, the comments and the feedback that you're hearing is that there's a need to lift up leadership and across the board with staff for sure. It seems like that's kind of an underlying statement that's occurring there.
It just seems to me that we have all of this in front of us, and it's valuable, and we don't know how to look at it and get some meaning out of it and make the improvements or whatever, or do something about it. You almost need someone who does this kind of work.
I think the staff directors can sit down together. What can we do?
Okay, well, that's one way that you could do that.
I was just saying, before engaging outsiders again, we know that I mean, it's 10% down in general. Whatever the reasons are, it's good. This staff was here during that. The staff can say, here's what I think happened, and which of those things can we affect, and which of those things do we think we cannot. But I averaged it over those all 5 years that was done, and then said, okay, in 2023, 9 of them were below the average of those 5. So you could take the ones that were below the average and go, okay, are those hot points that we should analyze? Why are people frustrated in those? 5 were above, 9 below, 5 above, 1 fell in right in equal, which is number 6. It fell in right in the medium number between all of it. So the data is there for us to use. We don't look at it all and go, which ones do we attack? Well, we know that 5 were up, 9 were down as far as the average across the 5. We can find those little data points to look at and go, there's something we should start asking questions about, talking to the staff about. So you kind of know where there's a lot of little landmines out there that analyzing it shows you where they lie and where you got to dig. And just an example, I look at 16 and I go, well, was morale low in 16 and then it went higher in 18? Or let's see, 16 to 18 went up, right? Mm-hmm. It was morale low in 16. What made it better in 18? And I just think there's data, there's information in there to try to, again, you all were living here and working it during it, to be able to try to figure out what made those. But there's clear trends. It's not like there's things for us to sit out here and kind of try to have to pick at to try to find something to talk about. And then to what Moselle's saying, I think the next conversation with this board and staff to have is, at whatever point, what happens with this? Where do we go with this? Like, what's our next step? What are we going to do next to be sure that the thoughts and concerns of employees are looked into?
And I think that's what the employees expect us to do.
I think it's before getting into the written responses. But
to me, the thing that is the hardest to discern from this is lack of understanding of, is this a problem across multiple departments, in one department, 2 departments, is it just across the board, we just don't have that information. Perhaps anonymity is helpful in a sense when you're coming to comments, but really when you're just coming to the raw data, maybe that's not as important, and that would be more valuable, just something to consider. The next survey. Because we're a team, so it's obviously the weakest link is going to affect everybody.
Good statements and good feedback. So
where do we go from here?
I think it's taking the data and again, there's methods and means for us to do this. There's staff. What was called it was called Tiger Team before. And it was a staff group that was led by different representative departments to bring out things and provide feedback and comments to, whether they want to see a different program, different change. I mean, certainly by looking at some of the other comments, there are some things that I'm already looking at the individual comments, again, trying to read between the lines. There's some things I can come to conclusions on.
Yeah.
When was Tiger Team put in place? Because that is a good one.
Yeah,
I think that was good. 2017.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly, maybe around that point. Yeah. And then kind of during COVID, it just kind of
it just kind of out.
There's a lot of enthusiasm with that.
I'm sorry?
There was a lot of enthusiasm with the tiger team.
So, like even question number 23, which again, I didn't see through whatever mess of mine, I didn't see 24 until tonight, and I really want to get time to sit with a lot of that. But even you could get information, almost data from 23. So, who would have thought that the gym membership would be the thing most mentioned in all the comments in number 23? Like,
yeah, that did strike me too.
Six different times in all the responses. But then the second one went down was five times professional development. So that says to me, you know, people are looking for how do they grow, and three different times merit raises were mentioned. So to me, we just got to figure out how we take all this and find trends and decide what our next steps are. So I suggest, you know, it's been put in front of us, and maybe at a, you know, somewhere in the next month or two, we know what next steps are to know how to deal with them.
Yeah. And it was overdue.
And we have people, you business person, you are, do you evaluate your staff?
Sure.
And how do you go about it? And last, is it any different from this that we're doing? I mean, it's smaller.
Probably more thorough, I'd say.
Is that?
This is probably more thorough.
You're more thorough?
No, this is probably more thorough because it's more one-on-one.
Okay.
Yeah. My organization's relatively small in relationship to the size of some of the employees, but you have a lot of contractors as well, too, so different relationship there.
A reoccurring theme that I learned long ago was to ask, especially with employees, to ask for the information and not do anything with it is far worse than never asking for the information. So I would suggest in January, at whatever point, we come back together with some thoughts of how to move forward with this and what we get out of it and where to go.
And what do we do with it in the past?
I'm sorry.
I think the tiger team was something that came.
Yeah, the tiger team came out. What year was that? Do you remember?
It was me that mid in this somewhere.
Yeah, and tiger team was prior to my starting with the county, and I started in 2014.
Okay.
Right. So maybe it was 2013.
Yeah, could have been. All right. Okay.
I was just gonna say, if you want to get with me on the tiger team and the career development, if you want to stop by, any of you guys, because I've actually worked on it all, feel free to stop by.
Okay. And so Tiger Team, I hadn't heard that until tonight. Tiger Team,
I joined in 2021 in January, and it was kind of dead because of COVID. We tried to revamp it a couple of times. I actually sent out a few emails. We met after the holiday party and invited people to come in that were interested in revamping the Tiger Team. We had about four people show up, five people, I take that back. Since then, two of those people have left. There wasn't a lot of people that were interested in joining the Tiger Team. Kelly was interested. Tori was interested, and Aaron was interested in revamping it, getting it a total team. So we didn't have a lot of people interested in revamping it, so it's just been HR that's been doing it and people from other departments that were joining in to help keeping it going, thank God. It's a lot of work. We were thinking about maybe renaming it, but that meant changing the handbook as well. We do want to keep it going, but in the meantime, we have been doing employee morale stuff as the employee picnic, other small things to keep employee morale up. But we do want to revamp it, but we need employees to be interested because it is a lot of work, as you saw with the employee holiday luncheon.
Yeah.
And the one thing with like the professional development, I mean, certainly from a budgeting standpoint,
right,
there's funds there for folks to do things. It's really about supervisors making sure that they're pushing their folks,
right,
to do, you know, to do those trainings and better themselves. So, I mean, I think there are a lot of takeaways from this, and so,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of different things we can, you know, as seeing the numbers, seeing the data, seeing the comments, I think there are decision boards.
So one point about the involvement of people with the Tiger Team, prior to Ms. Snow joining us, it was voluntold, not volunteered.
Right.
So
we wanted to change it up with the
directors
people.
Were told appoint a person from your department to this.
Over and over and over. We wanted to change it up and give different people the opportunity to help and not, oh, it's the same people for 10 years. Give other people chances to volunteer and help that maybe wanted to, you know, and had not had an opportunity to.
So when it was staff that was put together to strategize on staff oriented
whether it was a department head, I mean, you know, certainly wanted to get more than just department heads involved, get mid-level staff involved too.
We wanted everyone interested. Yeah, we wanted to give everyone an opportunity. Since then, we've grown rapidly, very rapidly with EMS and just employees in general. But we are getting there. It's just grown really fast in a short amount of
time. So, I mean, I think the Tiger Team or whatever we're going to call it is just one aspect of it. I mean, I think that's a way to get staff feedback, certainly on some of this stuff. Again, I think there are other things that... other decision points for me to get into.
And Ms. Snow's point is important. I mean, we have had rapid growth. And again, we don't know from the details of the survey, you know, whether out of the 84 people that responded, 45 of them were brand new employees or not. We don't have that information. You know, it could be, you know, that when you have rapid growth, you're still building up the processes and the types of things that you'd like to have in place, and maybe you don't have all the resources that you need. So we can't evaluate those comments against it. I'm not suggesting that that's the case. I'm just saying that's an example.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, things could, you know, we're more information.
We need to perfect the survey.
We do.
I think we need to perfect how we're doing this so we can get the information out of it easier. It has to be another, I would think, another method. And I do want to compliment y'all on the luncheon, the holiday luncheon.
Thank you.
I mean, my goodness. It was just all the gifts and things.
Oh, thank
you. It's
just
amazing. The only thing is, I wish we could have it somewhere where we can hear.
We've said that for years now. Yeah, we Eric and I have pondered on that since I joined the county. Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you. But you're welcome to stop by, and I'll go over any of it with you guys.
Well, this has been a good discussion. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to find the right avenue sometime down the road. At least we're doing something. Okay, any other comments? Eric, do you think we know what we're going to do, the direction looking at? Okay, good. All right, consent agenda. Minutes December the 6th, account payable report of November 2023. Accept dedication of right-of-way for the NVA Properties LLC, CRMF Commonwealth Attorney's Office Restoration, CRMF County Attorney Office, County Attorney Office Restoration, what did I say? Commonwealth and then the County Attorney. Did I get that right?
Yep.
Okay. Can we have a motion? Anybody want to pull anything from the F through J? Okay, may I have a motion to accept the consent?
So moved.
Second, please.
Second.
It has been moved by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Peter, that we accept the consent agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, and we have one absent. Unfinished business, Zions Crossroad West Waterline funding update.
Yeah, this will be really
trying to make. You always say this is going to be
good. I know.
Okay.
But I can't control board comments sometimes. So for this, and just let me give a quick background. I know the board is well aware of this, but just for those in the public, again, in February 2020, DEQ approached the county about extending the water line. They knew that we had a water line at the Zions Crossroads because they've got properties they've got some residences up there that there was a old petroleum release that they're doing. They've got some remediation in place for charcoal filtration for those properties. And then there's a couple others that are potentially at risk. So the county approached, DEQ approached the county about providing funding for that project to help to extend the water line going to those properties. Again, the Zions Crossroad project ends around 250 in Memory Lane, and this would bring the project another about a mile west of there to roughly the Beaver Dam Church area. So back when this kind of started, the project was looking as the project was going to be around a $1.5 million project. So DEQ committed a million of that, some money for engineering services, and then 800 for construction. And then the board had committed 500,000. When we took out some debt proceeds to finish the Zions Crossroads original project, there's a half million taken out as part of that to go towards that to make up that difference. So again, this is just the project, as I noted, Memory Lane, going down to Beaver Dam area, and again, this just kind of shows it again. The water line ends at Memory Lane and then goes down to about around the Beaver Dam market. There's some properties right around there that have the old petroleum release, and they have remediation happening through DEQ. So going back to look at kind of the history of what has occurred from a cost standpoint, you can see, and let's just look mainly at the estimated construction cost. You can see how the construction costs have kind of increased over the years. Again, mainly as you know, when we've had our engineers out here before, a lot of water and sewer projects have increased 30, 50, and even more in that in cost to do those projects. So you can see kind of, you know, where the estimated total is. And again, you know, there is some contingency built into some of this as well. And we do have estimated some high some higher costs for easement acquisition as kind of a worst case scenario. But again, looking at what the costs are, estimated current costs are currently, with the money that's been approved for this, that leaves around just under $1.8 million. So, and this is just kind of a breakout of the current construction costs. I'm not going to go through that too much. So again, back in 2020, the board moved forward, approved to move forward, and so the design for the project has been completed. There are a few additional design revisions that would be needed to move forward. Again, DEQ doesn't have any additional funding to provide for this project. Trust me, I've asked numerous times. And then also, I've come to the board a couple times about that we've submitted grant applications. The Virginia Department of Health, through the Office of Drinking Water, they have something called the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. It was kind of through ARPA, it provided funding out there for projects, whether it's, whatever the need may be from that locality, from different needs. A lot of the projects in the previous past year, there's some contaminants called PFAS and some lead lines that those have really taken kind of in this most recent round of funding. They have really kind of taken kind of the front and center on getting priority for funding. So in 2023, we submitted an application. We were denied that year. So I came back to the board last year, I think it was around December of this time, saying, did the board want to move forward with general fund dollars to do so? And the board had indicated yes. There was no formal vote, and I told the board at the time, it hasn't been moving rapidly across. I would like to apply one more time to see if we can get any potential funding for this. So we applied for an FY24 application. So the application was approved, but it was approved only for loan funding. So I'll tell you the way it works. So through this program, you apply for it, and so there's a couple different ways that it gets funded. You either get a full-on grant, where it's grant funds and there's no repayment for it. There is also an option to get a loan, but then there is some loan forgiveness
based upon if the areas are disadvantaged. There's a federal website to determine which areas of the county are disadvantaged, and there's numerous factors that go into that. Or they would just offer a loan. So the county, as I said, was approved for a loan if the county wanted to move forward with it. And just looking at the terms, you know, it was 100% loan for what we requested for the grant funding. And it's basically the interest rate would be 1% below market rates for 20 years. Currently, that rate varies between 2.35 and 3.15%. And then there's some other small reductions the county can get. I will say I'm not sure that this is the best deal from a loan. There are some provisions in here. There's some things called Buy America. I'm sorry here. What's it called? I forgot to bring my glasses because my eyes are getting strained in my older age now. Buy America, Build America. It's basically when you do some of these federal programs, they want you to use products that are sourced in America. You know, a lot of the PVC pipe that necessarily is not all the time, but some of the fittings and stuff maybe. Where I'm going with this, that adds cost to the project. So some of those costs that you saw on the screen there would not be the cost if we move forward with this. So the plus side is, you know, you get potentially a lower interest rate loan, but anytime there's some federal programs, there are some strings attached. Again, there's requirements on the type of materials you have to use. There's something called the Davis-Bacon Act, which is a reporting, making sure that everyone and contractors working on the project are getting paid a prevailing wage. Back in the day, that was more of an issue, making sure that contractors were, not so much in today's current labor or salary environment. That's less of an issue. But there's administrative costs to this. You know, you have to do, there's some checks and balances that you have to do with contractors and so on and so forth. So really what I'm trying to go with the board on this is, you know, we have to let VDH know by January 12th, 2024. And again, I can bring this back to the board at the January 3rd meeting for a formal decision, but I at least wanted to bring this to the board's attention just to see how the board wants to move forward with it and just ask questions or I can provide any data beforehand. Again, I want to make sure that we just let them know whether we're interested or we're not. Just when we've done water and sewer projects previously, we've generally gone through the Virginia Resource Authority. You know, we've done that for the Zions Crossroads project. We've done it for the James River Water Authority project for the initial funding that we got for the project. And, you know, just speaking with my contacts there, forget this program aside, generally interest rates for that currently are, again, probably in the 3-4% range. You know, if you did this program, it would be in the range of 2.35 to 3.15%. So, I mean, there is some interest savings in that.
Are we funding the 2.7 million or the 1.8 million?
It would be the 1.8 million. Okay. The difference. It would be. Let me go back here. It would be. I'm sorry. It would be roughly that number. Again, that's the estimate right now. And so, if the board says yes, we want to move forward. Again, we have some costs that are kind of baked in from a contingency standpoint. And we have some higher costs for easement acquisitions. The reason these numbers are in blue, because what was in the board package, when we were looking at, I did an up on the construction costs. Since that point, I've received revised construction costs from our engineers. So some of the construction costs from what I put in there previously have decreased a little bit. And, you know, we've added a little bit in there for easement acquisition. I think some of those amounts are high. And so some of these numbers have changed a little bit. Actually, from what was in the board package, I think it's about $100,000 less overall in the cost. But again, the 1.7 or 1.8, whatever you want to call it, would be the amount that the county would fund. Again, we've got $1 million from DEQ, about 150,000 of it, this number in red for engineering has already been spent, and then the county has $500,000 outstanding allocated to this project.
And,
so,
and I mean, could we get the number of what that additional work back continues?
How that would increase the cost. Yeah,
just a rough estimate is it's going to be $100,000. I mean, it's not a huge amount of money.
I could get that from our engineers.
The term of their interest rates would be just to calculate.
Yeah.
It makes sense just to do the VRA.
Yep.
We're not talking about whether we are going to do this. So we are doing this, right? Are we already committed?
So remember, the funding we got from DEQ, we got 200,000 that can go towards construction. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that can go towards design, and then we've got 800,000 that can go towards construction.
And I'm sorry, what was the first number again?
200,000.
Okay.
200,000 design, 800,000 for applied towards construction. So again, out of the 200,000, there's been more than, you know, getting close to getting up to that 200,000 that's been expended for design. So the design's basically there with some small revisions that would need to be done after looking at a couple different components that need to be tweaked a little bit. But the one thing when we entered into that agreement with DEQ to do the design, we wanted to make sure we weren't on the hook if for some reason the board didn't want to not move forward with the project. So there is no requirement for the board or the county to pay back any of the design funds if we decide we don't want to move forward. Again, as was discussed before, this project going down this way was always a future design, a future phase of the Zions Crossroads project going west. But you know, when DEQ approached us about this, it would provide funding to expand the project sooner than later, but like I said, it's certainly a board decision on how we want to move forward.
So yes, construction costs are going up 30% per year.
This seems like something new board should.
Agreed. I wasn't planning on having this board make a decision. I just wanted to provide some discussion. And we have one additional member in the crowd that'll be here, and then I know Mr. Gold was there previously.
Now, this is costing the DEQ because they have to monitor this every year.
Correct.
That's why they were interested in doing this to their costs.
For 20 years, I believe, roughly around 20 years, they've been providing this remediation. Mm-hmm. To these property owners, and once they knew that the water line was close, that's why they are willing, because again, there's something called a petroleum release fund, and these gas stations and stuff, when they put in these tanks, money goes into a petroleum release fund specifically for these purposes. If there's any type of mitigation that needs to happen, there's funds to help mitigate that. And so,
is there any possibility that they can contribute more?
No, DEQ would not. I've gone back to the well many times on this one.
So to date, the 149 call 150, that money has come from DEQ.
Yeah.
Is it a pass-through?
Yeah, we would spend it and we would submit for requisition for reimbursement.
There's no type of match?
Nope.
Wow. So really, we could walk away from it and having spent nothing and they're the ones who lost 150 grand.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
Okay, so...
So again, I can do that. I can run some numbers on and get an estimate of what the Buy America is. And then figure out some of the differences in debt issuance.
Okay, so everyone agree with how we move forward on that?
So how are we? What are we saying?
On the January 3rd meeting, I'll bring this back from the board. I'm going to provide some information on how much above and beyond does the Buy America add to materials, and then figuring out, let's just say this 1.8. is another 3% or 5%, figuring out the debt, the debt service based upon the interest rate on both of the different numbers, and we can make an informed decision from there.
Okay, doing no new business. And so now I'm going to open the second public comments. Anyone would like to come to this lectern and give their name and address and speak to the board, you have 5 minutes. Ms. Kelly.
Thank you. James Kelly, 363 Manor Boulevard in Palmyra, Virginia. I'm just starting a stopwatch here so I can monitor myself. Because you guys had a really thorough, interesting conversation about your employee survey. I actually do surveys for a living. Specifically, I've run surveys like that for several hundred organizations. I commend you for the thoughtfulness with which you've approached it. I have a number of recommendations as a professional as it relates to how to do those surveys, including the fact that, you know, if you do a survey every 2 or 3 years, it's really hard to monitor change. A lot happens in a 2 to 3 year time period, and so you might make all the right moves and pay lip service or actually change things, and then something else from outside comes and shots. So the best cadence for this sort of thing is on an annual basis. As it relates to Mr. O'Brien's question about sort of breakdowns by department, the best practice is actually to have people self-identify which of the organizations are like broad team leads that are on, and that way during reporting you can end up with, as long as you have at least 5 direct reports, you can have the statistics, maybe not the open ends or verbatims as Mr. Fairchild was indicating. And also as it relates to the 5-point and 10-point scales, you're absolutely right. Variance is going to be higher on anything that has more punches or points. I'm kind of skeptical that respondents and average people really know the difference between a 6 on a 10-point scale versus a 2 on a 5-point scale, and so that makes life harder for them. If you're going to ultimately change that, I would actually add 4 questions that are identical to the 4 on the 10-point scale, put them on the 5, have everybody actually answer both on the 10 and the 5 for calibration, and then the next year you just dump the 10 points, and that way you can smooth your data. So I am happy to provide any guidance or recommendations on that. Another thing you might want to think about is like, what is the one question that you care most about on that survey? What I didn't see is like, how likely are you to stay with the county or recommend employment to friends and neighbors? Those are things we would call key performance indices. And so if you have one of those in the survey and you can tuck it in the back so it doesn't bias the remainder of the survey, then you can do things called driver modeling, which ultimately tell you which of the 25 questions I saw on the screen are most or least important to driving satisfaction with the organization. And then you can really make meaningful contributions to changing whether it's culture or benefits or those sorts of things. So to the extent that it's useful, clearly I had my own role within the county, and if you don't find it conflict of interest, I'd be happy to do this. The main reason I'm here tonight is actually to thank our outgoing members. Genuinely, truly, there are a generation of students who owe you a debt of gratitude, and as does the entirety of the county for your service. I think that the hallmark of a great public servant, a great leader, and a great human is the quality of the questions that you ask during presentations and debate. It's something that I take seriously, and it's something that it shows that you pay attention and you care. And both of you, every single time you're at this table, you pay attention, you care, you're thoughtful. Ms. Eager and I, for instance, might not agree all the time on things, but I am in profound awe of the fact that you have a construct or an idea or something to weigh your decisions against, and that you're absolutely consistent with it. And so I find that really remarkable. And I genuinely can't think of a better advocate for education writ large. And so, obviously, Ms. Mozell, your presence will be missed incredibly. So, congratulations, but also quite a sad day.
Thank you.
So, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
And thanks for that offer. I think it's valuable. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good.
Good evening, Ken Ponds, 264 Manor Boulevard. And I just want to comment briefly on the staff survey. I can tell you from being on the staff, I filled one of those out. It was highly encouraged when I did it, so that's probably why your numbers were higher previously. I think having the department on there, there's some departments larger than others, so if they heavily participate, it could sway the results. And by the same token, if they don't, because their jobs probably don't permit them to, it could also sway it as well. I think you could maintain the survey structure that you have, and some of those questions add sub-questions where you drill down a little bit deeper. And I think on particular areas where it's fallen, if you added that extra data points in there, you don't have to carry them year for year, but it'll help you understand why that number dipped. And finally, I'd like to, again, thank both of you guys for your service, and Linda. I've worked a lot with Linda when I was on the staff. I'm going to miss you, ladies, and I appreciate everything you've done, and hopefully you'll be watching the meetings going forward, and hopefully they won't run so late into the night. But again, thank you.
Okay. Do we have anyone else? Thank you. I will close the second public comments and come back to the board for closed meeting. It's still running.
Last time you'll have to hear these words.
Yes, yes.
Madam Chair, I move the Atlantic County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to provisions of Section 2.2-371181 and Section 2.2-371188 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel, Director of Community Development position, and the County Administrator's Performance Report, and then legal matters for the matter of rescue squad.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, a motion for Mr. Pride and a second for Mrs. Deidre to go ahead and close session. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now in closed.
Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Nevada County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-371A of the Code of Virginia 1950 amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Okay. Have a second.
Second.
All right. Motion by Mr. Bryan, second by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And chair votes aye. And now,
we
need to extend the meeting.
Motion made.
For how long?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. All right. Second. All right. With the motion to extend the meeting by 2 minutes, by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Eber. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. And chair votes aye. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Second by Ms. Eber. Motion by Mr. Brent. That was backwards. But anyway, we are. And all in favor?
Hit that hammer hard. It's your last time to adjourn.